I remember talking to Siri during our second reunion, shortly after we first visited the villa along the coast near Feveron. We were walking along the beach. Alan had been allowed to stay in the city under Magritte's supervision. It was just as well. I was not truly comfortable with the boy. Only the undeniable green solemnity of his eyes and the disturbing mirror familiarity of his short, dark curls and snub of a nose served to tie him to me, to us, in my mind. That and the quick, almost sardonic smile I would catch him hiding from Siri when she reprimanded him. It was a smile too cynically amused and self-observant to be so practiced in a 10-year-old. I knew it well. I would have thought such things were learned, not inherited. "You know very little," Siri said to me. She was wading, shoeless, in a shallow tide pool. From time to time she would lift the delicate shell of a French horn conch, inspect it for flaws, and drop it back into the silty water. "I've been well trained," I replied. "Yes, I'm sure you've been well trained," agreed Siri. "I know you are quite skillful, Marin, but you know very little." Irritated, unsure of how to respond, I walked along with my head lowered. I dug a white lava stone out of the sand and tossed it far out into the bay. Rain clouds were piling along the eastern horizon. I found myself wishing that I was back aboard the ship. I had been reluctant to return this time, and now I knew that it had been a mistake. It was my third visit to Maui Covenant, our second reunion, as the poets and her people were calling it. I was 5 months away from being 21 standard years old. Siri had just celebrated her 37th birthday 3 weeks earlier. "I've been to a lot of places you've never seen," I said at last. It sounded petulant and childish, even to me. "Oh, yes," said Siri, and clapped her hands together. For a second, in her enthusiasm, I glimpsed my other Siri, the young girl I had dreamed about during the long 9 months of turnaround. Then the image slid back to harsh reality, and I was all too aware of her short hair, the loosening neck muscles, and the cords appearing on the backs of those once beloved hands. "You've been to places I'll never see," said Siri in a rush. Her voice was the same, almost the same. "Marin, my love, you've already seen things I cannot even imagine. You probably know more facts about the universe than I would guess exist. But you know very little, my darling." "What the hell are you talking about, Siri?" I sat down on a half-submerged log near the strip of wet sand and drew my knees up like a fence between us. Siri strode out of the tide pool and came to kneel in front of me. She took my hands in hers, and although mine were bigger, heavier, blunter of finger and bone, I could feel the strength in hers. I imagined it as the strength of years I had not shared. "You have to live to really know things, my love. Having Alan has helped me to understand that. There is something about raising a child that helps to sharpen one's sense of what is real." "How do you mean?" Siri squinted away from me for a few seconds and absently brushed back a strand of hair. Her left hand stayed firmly around both of mine. "I'm not sure," she said softly. "I think one begins to feel when things aren't important. I'm not sure how to put it. When you've spent 30 years entering rooms filled with strangers, you feel less pressure than when you've had only half that number of years of experience. You know what the room and the people in it probably hold for you, and you go looking for it. If it's not there, you sense it earlier and leave to go about your business. You just know more about what is, what isn't, and how little time there is to learn the difference. Do you understand, Marin? Do you follow me even a little bit?" "No," I said. Siri nodded and bit her lower lip. But she did not speak again for a while. Instead, she leaned over and kissed me. Her lips were dry and a little questioning. I held back for a second, seeing the sky beyond her, wanting time to think. But then I felt the warm intrusion of her tongue and closed my eyes. The tide was coming in behind us. I felt a sympathetic warmth and rising as Ciri unbuttoned my shirt and ran sharp fingernails across my chest. There was a second of emptiness between us, and I opened my eyes in time to see her unfastening the last buttons on the front of her white dress. Her breasts were larger than I remembered, heavier, the nipples broader and darker. The chill air nipped at both of us until I pulled the fabric down her shoulders and brought our upper bodies together. We slid down along the log to the warm sand. I pressed her closer, all the while wondering how I possibly could have thought her the stronger one. Her skin tasted of salt. Ciri's hands helped me, her short hair pressed back against the bleached wood, white cotton and sand. My pulse outraced the surf.
"Do you understand, Merin?"
she whispered to me seconds later, as her warmth connected us.
"Yes,"
I whispered back, but I did not.